From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's The Mountain Life.
In beautiful Park City.
Beautiful Park City. At least for the next couple of days. Yep. I hear it's getting cold again on the weekend.
It's supposed to be cold in early June, is it not?
It is.
Is it supposed to be 80 degrees?
It is all good, isn't it? Because it's cold, relative cold.
I keep looking at the thermostat on my, I hate to say it, on my car. As I'm driving my car around, adding to the congestion, not riding the bus, not riding my bicycle, which I do sometimes. Today I'm on my scooter, no thermostat. But I tell you, in the afternoon driving around here, and I see 80, 81, 82, and I'm like, wait a minute. In early June, that seems a little warm.
It is, but it's all good.
It's pretty nice.
This is The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch. It's the weekly program about health, nutrition, fitness, and all things lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Tim Henney. Today, we kick off the hour with a conversation with Dr. Andrew Weil. We speak with the doctor who is considered to be the founder of integrative medicine some 30 years ago. He is a best-selling author and researcher, and he's written a new book about prescription drug use and how it has increased tenfold in the last 50 years. No big surprise there. What does that mean for healing? Stay with us to find out. Dr. Weil says about knowing when to take meds and when to let your body heal on its own.
And then we'll speak with Julia Geisler of the Salt Lake Climbers Alliance about a partnership with the Mormon Church and an upcoming fundraising event. It's tomorrow night. Always fun, those Salt Lake Climbers Alliance fundraising events. And we'll also take a moment to talk about my beloved co-host Tim Henney's upcoming hiatus.
Well deserved.
Well deserved. It is
can you
not.
Can you deserve a hiatus?
You can deserve a sabbatical. Yes.
You are given a hiatus.
That is right. And of course, while Tim is campaigning for his second term on city council, he will not be joining me on The Mountain Life. And you are, of course, irreplaceable. And I'm going to miss you so much.
Thanks, Lynn.
Over the next months until the campaign season is over. I'm really going to miss you, but I fully expect that you will be texting me during the show what I'm doing wrong.
You can count on that. Well, I'm going to miss the show, too. It's one of the highlights of my life, quite honestly.
It is, and we have been doing this now. This show has been in existence as of September 7 years. And you didn't host it the first about year and a half.
Right.
So you started right now is about your anniversary for five years. So
in fact, that's why on LinkedIn, I've been given congratulations on your 5-year anniversary. And I'm looking at these notifications going, what? That would explain it.
So over those 5 years, wow, we have learned so much. Mm-hmm. We have wonderful guests. We learn all kinds of things, and the learning never stops here. And we'd like to think that we have a little more background knowledge as we interview these wonderful guests, but we keep adding to that.
We keep surprising ourselves with what we don't know.
Exactly. Exactly. And also, we have, in the 5 years that we've been doing this together, we've seen how trends sort of evolve, how fads come and go, how there are some bottom line, some truisms that will endure. And I think it's so interesting. And I'm sure we'll talk about some of those coming up with our interview with Dr. Andrew Weil.
Yeah.
And really excited about that interview.
One of those things that I've noticed over the last 5 years is, and we've talked about it numerous times, is how sort of ancient, traditional, almost philosophical or religious wellness beliefs are now being recognized by current day scientific research and medicine and integrated into what you would say Western medicine and our form of medicine. And we get that a lot. And we're getting that recognition from both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Both sides of the equation are saying, yes, you know, it does prove out. There is scientific research. And part of that is because of the technological development in the medical research industry and mm-hmm. the tools that they use to look into the brain. And neuroscientists are recognizing all sorts of things that relate to meditation and yoga and these ancient practices, which which we have been told for a long time do benefit us, and now it's being proven out. So I think that's something that we continue to see, and we've seen that over the course of the 5 years.
Absolutely. Yeah. And again, referencing our upcoming interview with Dr. Andrew Weil, he's been doing integrative medicine for 30 years. And so what he has seen over this evolution of dovetailing the two, alternative medicine, integrative medicine,
we can call it
traditional.
Woo-woo.
We can call the woo-woo what's the other word on the other side? We call it allopathic medicine, but that's not as fun as woo-woo.
Yeah.
Let's come up with another word.
Okay. I'll work on that while I'm on hiatus.
On your well-deserved hiatus.
I'll text you.
Yes, please do. And also just wanted to say that while you are irreplaceable, and so much so that I had to get two people that will be taking...
Not three, just two.
Just two. And I'm really excited about welcoming them to the show as well. Dave Cushing is a DJ here on KPCW on Wednesday afternoons.
He's the all-new Dave show. He can be the all-new Mountain Life Dave.
Well, no, it's very separate. His DJ gig is very separate from this very serious gig on the Mountain Life. So Dave Cushing will be doing 2 weeks, and then Graham Anthony, who I'll really look forward to hearing him on the air. He's got a great voice. He will be doing the other 2 weeks. So,
see, Dave, she really lays down the law. There are certain rules you have to follow here.
And Dave,
and they're called Lynn's laws.
Yes, yeah, and they're not written down anywhere, and they're subject to change at a moment's notice.
Does he have all the signals? Have you shown Dave the signals?
You're
going to go over that.
He's sitting in the studio right now, and we are going to do signals
we'll
in a big way.
We'll do our signals.
Yeah. So anyway, again, I will miss you. But this will give us lots of time to instead spend some quality time perhaps riding our bikes on the trails of Park City together.
Good over. Call.
Right. Okay.
Alternate plan B, we'll call that plan B
plan
for
B.
Bike.
So let's take a quick underwriting break, and we'll be back to speak with Dr. Andrew Weil. Stay with us. It's the Mountain Life.
Hi, this is Whitney Wall from Park City Mountain and proud supporter of KPCW. This summer, Park City Mountain offers a variety of events for the whole family, including the annual July 4th celebration and fireworks, summer concert series, and weekly Wednesday Farmers Market. The full calendar of Park City Mountain events is available at parkcitymountain.com.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. Our first guest, Dr. Andrew Weil, has achieved status really as a celebrity doctor, but for good reason. He's a best-selling New York Times author, a graduate of Harvard Medical School, and is a professor of health, clinical professor of medicine, and is the director of the University of Arizona Center for Integrative Medicine. In fact, he is one of the foremost advocates for integrative medicine, and has been for the last 30 years. We are pleased that he'll be joining us to talk about his new book called Mind Over Meds: Know When Drugs Are Necessary, When Alternatives Are Better, and When to Let Your Body Heal on Its Own. Dr. Andrew Weil, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, let's just start with your very interesting history, just so we can get an idea of, I mean, everyone knows who you are, but do they really know who you are? And I would say that you were the pioneer of integrative medicine. And so if you could take us there and to why you felt that there was a void or a gap that needed to be bridged between, say, alternative and allopathic medicine.
Well, I felt that the medical education I got, which was a very good conventional education at Harvard Medical School, left important things out that I felt were critical to health, among them nutrition, any information about botanical medicine, any information about how the mind interacted with the body, any information about other systems of medicine, like traditional Chinese medicine. I felt there were a lot of deficiencies, and also I really learned very little about how to keep people well, and it's always seemed to me that that should be the main business of doctors, to teach people how not to get sick in the first place.
Right. And so, you know, this was about 30 years ago when you started introducing this in and sort of transforming medical practice, I guess I could say. What kind of resistance were you met with then, and how has that evolved over those years?
Well, at the beginning, I think none of my medical colleagues paid any attention to me. I had a following in the general public from my writings, but it was really not until the early 1990s that anyone in medicine began to pay attention to what I was saying, and I think that's when the economics of healthcare began to deteriorate. So, you know, what I take from that is that no amount of ideological argument moved anything. It's only when the pocketbooks of institutions really get squeezed that they open up to what consumers have been demanding.
And Dr. Weil, now that, you know, I want to kind of follow up a little bit more with what Lynn began in that question, which is 30 years ago, it was a much different landscape, and you just described that in the resistance. But today, we talk about wellness, we talk about integrated medicine, we talk about the negative effects and sometimes the unintended consequences of big pharma. We talk about the vested money. So this is really in the consciousness, I would say, of everyone, or everyone's probably an overstatement. Let's say a lot of people. And I would think in the beginning there was a certain energy that you got about being that that lone wolf out there who was kind of trailblazing. But that trail is pretty well beaten in these days. Has that changed your engagement? Because what is this, the 14th book you've written?
Yes, it is. Well, you know, it's been very gratifying to me to watch integrative medicine becoming mainstream. Another thing that's happened is that many, many doctors are really dissatisfied with the nature of healthcare. They're tired of just pushing pills. They dislike having to work in for-profit systems. A lot of them are burned out, and that also has worked in favor of the integrative medicine movement.
And so, what energizes you today versus what energized you then? I mean, you're gratified because, you know, you see it in the consciousness, but what kind of gets you excited and keeps you connected and engaged?
Well, I direct a center of excellence at the University of Arizona College of Medicine, the Center for Integrative Medicine. We mostly train physicians and allied health professionals, and we've graduated now almost 1,500 physicians from very intensive trainings in integrative medicine, and they're in practice in all states, and many of them are academic leaders, so I think they're really spearheading this new movement, and it's very gratifying to watch the numbers of enthusiastic people who come to get retrained and have all those deficiencies corrected.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Dr. Andrew Weil. He's written a new book called Mind Over Meds: Know When Drugs Are Necessary, When Alternatives Are Better, and When to Let Your Body Heal on Its Own. So given that our general knowledge about healthcare has evolved, let's talk a little bit about, well, some of the things that you address in the book. And one of those is, well, Chapter 1, antibiotics. Many of us have known for a long time that antibiotics are overprescribed, and yet we haven't known what to do when our child has an ear infection. You know, what else to do? We know to follow it up with some things that may make you healthier at the end. But what do you say in your book about antibiotics and superbugs and things like that?
Well, saying that they're overprescribed is putting it mildly. I think, you know, serious experts are now saying that we may not have antibiotics in the very near future, that we will have completely lost them as tools because of the way that we squandered their use. My gut estimate is that they're needed in about 10% of the instances in which they're now prescribed. And this is a vast problem. And any time a patient demands an antibiotic for a trivial infection or a viral illness, you know, they're contributing to the problem. Anytime a doctor complies with that request, they are. You mentioned ear infections in kids. One of the very interesting kinds of medicine that I looked at was osteopathic manipulation. Mm-hmm. And I worked with an elderly osteopathic physician who regularly ended recurrent cycles of ear infections in kids just through manipulation of the body, correcting breathing patterns, and very dramatic effect.
Mm, that's nice. I have that same story, an amazing quick healing every time I would take my son to the chiropractor when he had an ear infection. Even one time she suggested this one is bad enough that she's going to adjust him, but you might want to go ahead and get some antibiotics. And by the time I made it to the doctor said, yeah, it's not looking very bad. Yeah, I don't think you need an antibiotic. So, yeah,
good story.
Yes, good stories, and I'm sure you have scores and scores of great stories. You know, one of the chapters that caught my eye was the prevalence of sleep aids. And you know, as you know, and I know you follow the news, sleep is suddenly resurging in the news as, you know, the latest trend, the latest thing that you really want to get. So talk about those sleep aids.
Yeah, vast numbers of people are taking both prescribed and over-the-counter sleep medications, and the fact you need to know is that none of these reproduces natural sleep. They all give a kind of counterfeit sleep. For instance, they all suppress dreaming, and dreaming is absolutely essential to good physical and emotional well-being. Many of these medications are addictive, seriously so. Many of them interfere with cognitive function. I think, you know, it may be okay to use them very short term for situational insomnia, but you don't want to rely on these long term. And there's a whole field called sleep hygiene, which analyzes all the factors that go into making for good sleep or interfering with it, everything from the comfort of a mattress to aches and pains to light in the bedroom to use of too much caffeine. You want to look at all these things and see what you can correct before resorting to a sleep aid. If you do need to take something, there are two natural products that are safe. One is the herb valerian that's been used for centuries in European medicine, very safe, non-addictive, and the other is melatonin. But even with these, I think, you know, it's best to use these short-term and not depend on them regularly.
Dr. Weil, this is a sort of a personal question on that same sleep issue and what might aid. What about aspirin or ibuprofen right before bed? Because, you know, you talked about aches and pains, and that kind of helps me with a little bit of the aches and pains, and I find that I drop off. But after about 4 hours, when I think either the aspirin or the ibuprofen wears off, I wake right up.
And the other problem, you know, these are the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, or NSAIDs. If used regularly, they all have significant risks of increasing bleeding in the gastrointestinal tract, of interfering with heart function, many other things. So, you know, these are such common drugs. They're so widely available. I think people assume that they're benign, and they're not. And I think they should also be used for specific problems, not taken regularly for any purpose.
Well, what is regular or overuse with aspirin or ibuprofen? Because I think everybody has a different idea of what's a little bit and what's maybe too much.
Well, I think best not to take these daily, month in, month out. I think it's with regular use that the problems begin to appear with them.
I want to skip ahead. I don't know if you've seen the documentary called What the Health.
I haven't.
It had a screening here in Park City last week, and you know, not being a diabetic, for anyone who's not diabetic, you are amazed when you see the numbers of medications that a diabetic is on, especially one who deals with other health related, or I would say obesity related issues, really. And they've sort of chronicled three different people that were on, you know, about 10 medications. And it was all of sort of an argument for a plant-based diet. I think it's the last chapter in your book, you talk about, or one of the last, about medications for diabetes. I mean, how can you get away from that?
Well, for type 2 diabetes, which is the more common form, for many cases, you know, most cases of mild to moderate type 2 diabetes can be put into remission through lifestyle change, a correcting diet, losing weight, increasing physical activity, using natural products that help control blood sugar. For severe diabetes, medication is probably necessary, but if you make these lifestyle changes, you can reduce the dosage and numbers of medication. And by the way, you said 10 medications, and one of the things I point out in the book is that if you are on 5 or more medications, there's an overwhelming chance of a serious drug-drug interaction.
Right.
So that's the reason for keeping numbers of medications down.
Yeah. You know, steroid use and cortisone, you know, it seems like, or not cortisone, what am I, corticosteroids, prednisone, there we go.
Yeah.
You know, people have to take that for a variety of mm-hmm. reasons, and some seem quite unavoidable, shall we say. And you talk about the value of those steroids. Let's explore that a little bit. I mean, is there ever a way
around? Very powerful anti-inflammatory drugs, useful for suppressing severe allergic reactions, autoimmunity, but they come with serious risks of toxicity in long-term use. And again, there are common forms of these available, and people use them for trivial conditions, for diaper rash, for poison oak, when I think once you're better off without steroids. If you are required to take steroids, the goal would be to get by with a minimum dose. And again, there are many strategies in integrative medicine where using lifestyle change, other methods, you can, if you have to use the steroids, you can stay on them for shorter lengths of time at lower dosages.
Do you ever watch enough television to see the ads that are run for prescription and big pharma drugs? And I mean, between the beer commercials, the truck commercials, and the big pharma commercials, with that long list at the end of possible side effects and consequences, which is kind of mind-blowing when you actually listen to the possible side effects, do you just shake your head and go, what is happening here?
I do, and even more alarming is the fact, which many people don't know, that adverse drug reactions are the fourth leading cause of death in this country. Mm-hmm. So you really want to be aware of the risks of medications. You don't want to take a drug just because a doctor says you should. You want to have a clear explanation of why you need it. If you can't get that, you want to do some homework. You want to find out whether there are other methods available besides the medication for managing the condition. And if you're on multiple medications, one strong recommendation I make is to consult with a pharmacist to get a medication therapy management review. This is a service that pharmacists are trained to provide. They often can do it for free or for a nominal charge, or it's covered by Medicare. You can take your list of medications to a pharmacist, and that person can look them over and say whether they're necessary, which may be duplicative, which you might do better to change. The pharmacist can't make changes, but they can recommend changes to your health provider and to you.
Is the FDA meeting its mission, or do we misunderstand the possible, you know, my interpretation of what the FDA's mission is supposed to be, which I thought was to kind of make sure that we were all a little bit protected and safe from commercial interests that might want to exploit the use of drugs?
In recent years, the FDA has paid more attention to protecting the industry than protecting the public. It's gotten very cozy with the industry. And also, all of the regulations that we have and all of the testing that's required have not kept a great many worthless and dangerous drugs off the market. I have to tell you, I don't have a great view of the stuff you see advertised on television. I think in many of those products, the manufacturers greatly exaggerate their benefits and greatly downplay their risks.
Well, and the manufacturers have invested in sales forces that go out and directly lobby doctors and even the public.
Well, the public is lobbied through these ads, and I pointed out in the book that there's only one other country in the world that allows direct-to-consumer advertising of pharmaceutical drugs. That's New Zealand. Now, that's a practice that should be ended. It's been a huge boon to the big pharma and a disaster for medical practice. And also, as you note, big pharma strongly influences the prescribing habits of physicians who depend mostly on information from the industry rather than on objective sources.
Mm. We're speaking with integrative medical doctor Andrew Weil. His new book is Mind Over Meds. I have to say, I don't watch a lot of TV, and so when I do and I see those pharma ads, I always think it's a Saturday Night Live skit.
I know. I have the same reaction.
Because how could it not be?
Yeah.
So I have to ask you a question. You know, you're described as celebrity doctor, and, you know, other doctors like Dr. Oz and, you know, Dr. Mark Hyman. We know him because he comes to Park City quite often mm-hmm. to speak. I think he must have a friend here. But you know, there are probably upsides and downsides to being a quote-unquote celebrity doctor. And, you know, one of those is you achieve this level of expertise and status that allows you to, you know, write 14 books, you know, to pump your own, you know, your system, your beliefs. And I'm just wondering if there is a downside to it, and if so, what is that?
Well, you know, I have one life is what I do with the public, you know, writing books, managing a website. But the other half of my life is being an academic physician within a university medical center. And I'm involved in the training of physicians and other health professionals. And I think in that role, I have to be very responsible and accountable to my colleagues. And I think that balances out the, you know, any of the negative effects of the celebrity status.
Right, right. Interesting. I wanted to ask you about supplements, and I know it's a huge, huge topic, and you can't take supplements in general, but we have interviewed several healthcare experts who basically shun any supplement in any case. And, you know, some very good, you know, science presented and research. And then you find others that support the use of supplements. I believe you're one of them. And I just wanted you to explore that.
Sure. I would say supplements are not substitutes for the whole foods that contain them. At best, they're partial representations of what nature produces. And taking supplements does not excuse you from working to have a good diet. But I think dietary supplements can be useful as insurance against gaps in the diet. And some of these products in higher dosages than you can get from foods have specific therapeutic or preventive effects. And you need to know that physicians are not trained in the use of dietary supplements. Pharmacists may not be either. A lot of the research that's been published saying that supplements are worthless or dangerous is not very well-designed research. So I think there are definite uses for them, but you need to know what forms, what dosages are correct, and it would be great if your health professional could advise you about that. And that's, again, something we're trying to work on in integrative medicine education. That's part of the curriculum that we teach.
Right. And again, how does the average consumer know? I've heard this a lot, you know, say you're going to take fish oil, and your healthcare practitioner says, oh, well, don't buy the fish oil at such and such place or from so and so because that'll be rancid. You have to buy, you know, my product, my fish oil. And I go, wait a minute, you know, so really the stuff I buy at Whole Foods is just not going to work, or at the natural, you know, food stores, it's going to be rancid. It's going to be worse for me.
There are some, you know, very good fish oils that are not expensive that you can get in places like Costco or Whole Foods or Trader Joe's. You know, most fish oils are molecularly distilled and free from contaminants. You want to read labels to see exactly what you're getting. There are websites that are helpful, like consumerlab.com, or you'll find information on my website, drwild.com, that can help guide you through that maze of products.
I have a question on two vitamins, coenzyme Q10, CoQ10, because we hear a lot about that, and I've heard really good things about that, and I've actually been taking it for probably 4 or 5 years, and then turmeric.
All right, well, they're both really interesting. CoQ10 I take myself. It is a powerful antioxidant. It's necessary for optimal muscle health. Anyone taking a statin drug should be on it because statins suppress the body's ability to make CoQ10. And some of the muscle pain that sometimes happens in patients taking statins may be related to that deficiency of CoQ10. CoQ10 increases aerobic capacity. It's been useful in the treatment of heart failure, in Parkinson's disease. I think it's a useful, safe supplement. Turmeric is probably one of the hottest natural products out there. This is the yellow spice that's in curry powder and yellow mustard. It's the most powerful natural anti-inflammatory agent that we know. And a lot of research backing it. I've seen very good clinical results in people with inflammatory conditions, autoimmune conditions, who take turmeric both in food and as supplements, and have been able to get off or reduce the dosage of anti-inflammatory medications.
Oh, I like the answer to both of those because I use both of those.
they're
yay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and thanks for reminding me, Tim, because I was taking turmeric, and I don't know why. I just forgot to, and I forgot all about it. Amazing.
Uh-huh. But
it's not cheap.
Oh, maybe that was
right. May help prevent Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah, or maybe not.
In this case. You know, I want to ask you before we let you go about vitamin D. You know, about 5 years ago, vitamin D, you know, everyone,
yep.
Vitamin D will cure everything.
Right.
Where are we on vitamin D now?
The best way to get vitamin D is from the sun. You know, sun exposure and judicious sun exposure is the best. But in most of the country, for 6 months of the year, the sun is at not high enough an angle in the sky for you to make vitamin D. And it's very hard to get that from food. So I recommend that people take vitamin D supplements. I recommend 2,000 IU of vitamin D3 a day. I think that's a perfectly safe dose. Actually, many people recommend more than that. It's good to get your vitamin D level tested, your blood level tested. If it's very low, you may need a much higher dose to get it up. I think it's good to keep it in the high optimum range. There are many benefits to having sufficient vitamin D.
Are there daily essentials, and have we just covered them by any coincidental, you know?
Well, those are daily essentials,
yeah.
Absolutely. I recommend everybody take vitamin D. I think everybody should take a fish oil, even if they eat fish sources of omega-3 fatty acids.
All right. Well, we did cover that. Great.
Yeah.
Well, the book is Mind Over Meds, Know When Drugs Are Necessary, When Alternatives Are Better, and When to Let Your Body Heal on Its Own. Our guest is Dr. Andrew Weil, and we're so pleased to talk with you today. Thank you.
Happy to talk with you. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
A great conversation with Dr. Andrew Weil.
Fascinating man. Been at it a long time.
Boy, he sure
has. And you got
to
love the beard.
Oh, yes. He has a signature look, doesn't he?
He would fit right in on Park City Main Street.
Again, it's
outside
mind,
the no-name.
Mind over meds. He inspired me to continue on my vitamin D quest.
Yeah.
Because even though it's summer, and even though a lot of our skin is being exposed and we're getting vitamin D, most of us just, we just don't get enough. And turmeric. And CoQ10.
Yeah, those are my favorites.
Yeah.
But I like the D also.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. We'll be back in just a moment. We'll be speaking with Julia Geisler of the Salt Lake Climbers Alliance and also about some new information that we found on the New York Times blog Well with one of our favorites, Gretchen Reynolds. Stay with us.
This is Damon Rogers, the new general manager of Park Meadows Country Club, proud sponsor of KPCW. I'm excited about the current clubhouse renovation where we'll have expanded indoor-outdoor dining, mountain views, a new fitness center, and locker rooms coming this fall. More info at parkmeadowscc.com.
Hi, I'm Matt from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of contemporary and mountain modern home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake and offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com. San Francisco Design, love your home.
Hi, I'm Julie Hopkins at Keller Williams Real Estate. I share KPCW's pride in our community, and so I love supporting the Daily Lost and Found Report on KPCW and their coverage of Park City's fantastic nonprofits. For real estate, it's jhparkcity.com, and for Lost and Found, it's KPCW every day.
Support of KPCW comes from Zions Bank International Banking and Foreign Exchange Services. Zions Bank. We haven't forgotten who keeps us in business. More information available online at zionsbank.com.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney on his last Mountain Life show before his well-deserved hiatus.
I don't like the way you say last.
Well,
because it has this
on this show, I know,
ring
you,
of permanence.
You will be back.
Oh, I will be back.
A hiatus until either August or November.
Yeah.
But you will be back, and I will miss you. Yes. So we were just speaking with Dr. Andrew Weil, his book, Mind Over Meds. Really interesting. Good information. And now we speak with, someone we love to have on our show. It's Julia Geisler. She is the executive director of the Salt Lake Climbers Alliance. And while the title has Salt Lake in it, they really do work all over the state and in the Wasatch. And because there's a climbing community here in Park City, we always like to bring news of the Salt Lake Climbers Alliance. And the news for this week is that there's a great fundraising event, and it is tomorrow night in the Black Diamond parking lot, which is a great place to have a party. Have you ever been to one there?
I have.
Yeah, they're great. So let's welcome Julia Geisler to the Mountain Life. Hi, Julia.
Good morning, guys. And I'm going to start taking turmeric for my elbows from climbing.
Oh, is that right? Good. Turmeric from your elbows.
Well, I mean, not from my elbows, for my elbows.
For your elbows. Sorry.
From climbing.
Well, I was picturing, do you scrape your elbows along the wall?
No, it's kind of like a tennis elbow feeling where when you climb a lot.
It's the inflammation because this is an anti-inflammatory, right?
I don't know why I was picturing. Her elbows are getting rubbed on the wall. Okay. I'm with you
now. Okay, well, good morning.
I'm with you. I know. That's right. Okay. I'm glad to know you're on to your turmeric effort there. But let's talk about, before we talk about the fundraising party, which is always so much fun, let's talk a little bit about this partnership with the Mormon Church. Of course, what the Salt Lake Climbers Alliance does in a lot of cases is protecting those trailheads that climbers depart from to go climb. And you're partnering with the Mormon Church, so I'm assuming this is in Little Cottonwood Canyon.
Yeah, so just to back up a little bit, the Salt Lake Climbers Alliance is your local nonprofit rock climbing advocacy group, and we exist to be a unified voice for climbers in the Wasatch through stewardship, community advocacy, and education. And so you're right when you say we speak for, you know, all climbers across the Wasatch in Salt Lake and in Park City. And what you're referring to is a recreational lease that we just entered. It's really monumental with the LDS Church, and it's for 140 acres in Little Cottonwood Canyon called the Gate Buttress area. And climbers have been going there since the 1960s to climb. The church has graciously allowed us to climb on their property. However, you know, no formal agreement has ever been put in place to secure access, and we haven't been able to do any stewardship work with trails and rebolting climbs until this lease went through. So we are thrilled and also a little intimidated because now we have to fund the recreation infrastructure at this project.
And so
our fundraiser tomorrow night.
Okay, so that recreation infrastructure is what?
So, yes, you said it. You know, climbers like to go straight up to the rock climb. We really don't care about the trail that we're hiking on, but that has an impact on the Salt Lake City watershed. So we are going to be building a lot of stone staircases and a lot of stone retaining walls at the climbing areas to limit that erosion. And that's all done by hand and with, you know, professional trail crews that are really experienced with this work. And we just got done a season doing this kind of work in Lower Little Cottonwood. There's a new trail. It's a 1-mile trail called the Alpenbach Loop, leaves from the Lower Little Cottonwood Park and Ride. And if you hike that trail, you'll see exactly what kind of work I'm talking about with really technical rock work. It's just amazing how much granite was moved in order to make stairs and, you know, retaining walls to limit that erosion impact that we have. So that's one thing is the horizontal trails. And then the other thing we fixed are the vertical trails. So rebolting and replacing old hardware that is in the rock that is kind of a preventative method in order to update the hardware with stainless hardware. A lot of it's not stainless. And, so it's both of those things, as well as eventually a restroom and better parking facilities there at the Gate Buttress.
You know, Julia, traditionally, I think climbers have for years been working on those vertical trails, right? I mean, you have to go back from time to time and put in better safety equipment because it's, you know, a threat to life and safety of the climber. So there's been that practice and a best practice of that I've known about for probably four decades, and I'm sure it's been going on for a lot longer than that. But this other aspect, the trail, the access trail, that's kind of new. And is there resistance among the climbing community, or are they rallying to the cause? And I'm going to say something that may not be accurate, but I don't get the sense that climbers are recognized as having deep pockets. They kind of are recognized. Well, they have deep pockets, but short arms. Is that maybe accurate?
Well, I think all of us are climbers, no matter what your socioeconomic background is. You know, there's doctors, lawyers, anybody could be a climber. So,
but does that make those doctors less willing to contribute to the access trail? I'm just exploring.
I don't think so. Climbing's gone so mainstream that old perception of the dirtbag climber is kind of a thing of the past.
Okay, you said it, not me.
Yeah, if you look at the indoor climbing gyms that are popping up, you know, it's slated to go to the Olympics. Look at what just happened in Yosemite with Alex Honnold. It's just gone mainstream. So
yeah.
I think that's a thing of the past, and I think climbers have, you know, really stepped up to the plate with being good stewards of the environments in which they climb in.
Well, that's really good to hear. And, you know, kudos to you and your organization for pushing that aspect and increasing the awareness and then getting the funding and kind of, you know, creating a cause that people can use as a catalyst and galvanize around and take action. And you just said Alex Honnold, and I saw Lynn write it down, and I've got it on my iPad because I wanted to get your impression of his climb at Yosemite. And when you heard about that, or did you know that was coming? Did the climbing community know he was about to do this? Because I read the article and it seemed like it was kind of a secret ops operation, and he kind of sprung it on everybody.
I had no idea it was coming, and I was absolutely astonished. What he pulled off was climbing 3,000 feet of a really hard grade. 13A is something that I can't do, you know, as a climber. Most climbers can't climb that with a rope, and he climbed it without a rope. So it was absolutely astonishing. I think it definitely pushes the human limit of what we think is possible. Absolutely.
Well, I think you should get him to come to one of your fundraisers. Is he going to show up at the Black Diamond parking lot?
Because he's quite the celebrity now. So
you want to talk about going mainstream. That would bring a lot of people out of the woodwork.
Definitely, definitely. And, you know, just to back up one more thing you said that I think is a misnomer is that climbers think that the bolts are being replaced by the people that put up the routes originally. And oftentimes that's just not true. Mm-hmm. Maybe some route climbers or route developers, I should say, you know, the people that first put up these routes in the 1970s and 60s, some of them have gone back to replace some of their bolts. But by and large, a lot of them have never been replaced. And so it's quite a large access issue, in my opinion, to need to go back and update the hardware. And there's a lot of it. So it's not easy. Taking one bolt out of the rock is sometimes an hour.
And Julia, when you say, you know, the people who put them in originally, the developers haven't gone back and replaced them, is it up to the people who originally put the equipment in to go back and replace, or is it up to the next generation to assess the health of the equipment and then do something about it?
You know, I think it's the responsibility of the climbing community at large, as well as the individual climbing that route. Each time you climb a route, you need to assess not only if you can do the route, but also how you're protecting it. And that kind of goes into it. Like, do you really want to clip a manky bolt or not? It's up to you. And maybe you will feel a greater responsibility to join the force to replace the hardware. I think, it's also something that is highly technical in the work itself. And so not just anybody should be out there replacing bolts. It does take a lot of expertise and knowledge, and people's lives are at risk, so you want to do it right. So I would say, you know, donate to the Sully Climbers Alliance. That funding goes a long way to help pay for these efforts to replace bolts and anchors.
Let's talk a little bit about the fundraising in just a moment, but I have another question about that. As someone who, you know, I'm not a regular climber, but occasionally I'll climb or canyoneer or do Via Ferrata, and so I've often wondered about how a bolt is tested or maintained, and I'm wondering if you're out there, I mean, is it obvious the ones that, well, maybe I should reframe this question by saying, is there ever one that seems like it is absolutely secure and that just rips out of the wall because it wasn't done right in the beginning? Or can you always tell, oh, this bolt seems to be giving way a bit?
You're asking a very loaded question here, and I would point you to the Access Fund is a national rock climbing organization, and they have a lot of information about fixed hardware, kind of things to look for.
Right.
To answer your question, you know, no, sometimes you don't know if that bolt is bad, because a lot of times metals have been mixed with stainless and non-stainless, and it's corroding inside the rock, and the outside might look shiny and new, but then the inside is rusted and is in need of replacement.
Okay, now you've scared me.
not heard of that bolts rip out of the rock. It could happen.
Right.
It has happened, but on a regular basis, that doesn't, is not a normal thing.
Right.
But we're trying to be preventative and replace the stuff that was put in the 1970s and 80s.
And that's why everyone should show up at the Black Diamond parking lot tomorrow night, June 8th, for a great fundraiser party. So tell us about the party. What's going to happen?
Sure. And yeah, you don't need to be a climber to come. I think the work that we do, to mitigate erosion in our watershed serves all users, and it makes these environments more sustainable for all of us to enjoy. But yes, it's tomorrow night, 6 to 10 p.m. Tickets are online at saltlakeclimbers.org. To get them before 4 o'clock today, they're $25, and at the door is $35. And again, yeah, it's in the Black Diamond parking lot in Salt Lake City.
Okay.
And there is going to be food, Yoshi's Grill. It's a Japanese grill, Moab Brewery beer, silent auction. And then the cool thing is we have tons of games operated by the vendors like Black Diamond and Petzl. This is also hosted by Black Diamond. We get this crane donated every year, and we stack milk crates and we climb on the milk crates. You're on a rope and on a harness. The person that can get the highest stack of milk crates wins. So things like that definitely.
Those are so much fun to watch as well. And how many crates have been erected before, for the limit when you've done one of these events?
I think the limit was 28, so we'll have about 30, 35 on site to try to beat it from last year.
Oh, that's high. And a milk crate is about 18 inches high or so, right?
It's high, yeah. And then you whenever the crates fall over, you're hanging in the air. And then there's other games, like arm wrestling and pull-up contests and push-up contests and, things that are just fun and silly
climber
and
games.
Tricks a lot of times.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a strange assortment of what's being called games. Julia, does the winner of the milk crate climb, is that person always a climber? Or is there occasionally some just little, half monkey child that shows up and goes up 30 crates?
Well, Tim, I think we're all climbers at heart.
There we go. We're back to we're all climbers.
Between a climber and a non-climber. I think, anybody is welcome to come to this event. And, old, young, all fitness levels, you can definitely climb no matter shape, age, ability, or socioeconomic range.
There we go. Well pulled together. Hey, I have to go back and ask you a question about Alex Honnold. So we spoke with Tommy Caldwell a couple weeks ago about his new book, The Push, and it's about his life, but it's also about the climb of the Dawn Wall. And, it took him, was it 17 or 19 days, he and his partner, and they, had several base camps established along the wall. Did Alex climb the same pitch, the Dawn Wall? No.
That I'm not sure exactly what route he was on, but he climbed 3,000 feet in under 4 hours.
Yeah, it has to be a different route than what Tommy Caldwell did.
I think you're right.
Okay, I just, because it was so fascinating, I was so impressed, and then suddenly I see this headline pop up about Alex Honnold climbing it in 4 hours.
Takes usually like 3 or 4 days. For most normal human beings.
Okay.
And they sleep on the wall. He did it in under 4 hours.
Okay.
3 hours and 58 minutes or something like that.
It's just incredible. Okay, so we are distinguishing two different routes. Okay, wonderful. Back to the fundraiser and the fundraising efforts. We are just all over the place today, but I like it. I'm wondering, so wonderful that you could formalize this partnership with LDS Church. Obviously, they have a lot of funding. Are they kicking in, or are they saying, listen, we'll let you do this, but it's all up to you to create your own funding for this? Are they also granting you money?
You know, the church is being an amazing partner, let's mm-hmm. just say that. And the arrangements behind the scenes are moving forward in a really awesome way. It's going to take, though, we're trying to raise about $150,000 to go wow. into recreation infrastructure there. So that's not going to be just one entity helping to fund. It will be federal grants, state grants, you know, local, county, all getting on board, just the way we funded the Lower Little Cottonwood Alpenbach Loop, same thing. It takes the entire community, from federal, state, local, to private, to the individual, to make these recreation infrastructure projects happen. Trails are expensive, especially when you have to build them by hand.
Yes.
And you're replacing the vertical trails.
Yeah, and move granite while you're at it.
And move granite. We're moving, yeah, mountains.
Yeah. So the fundraiser taking place tomorrow night, 6 to 10 p.m. at the Black Diamond parking lot, and that is, I always forget, is it on 40, it's on 39th South, it's 2084 East, 39th South in Salt Lake City, and tickets you can buy online, or you could buy them at the door tomorrow, a little bit more expensive. Sounds great. Are there any other quick projects that you can tell us about?
You know, just stay tuned for August 26th and 27th. We put on the Salt Lake Climbing Festival. And that's a weekend of climbing clinics where you can come out and increase your climbing skills on the rock and take these clinics and stay with us up at the Alpen Rose in Brighton.
Oh, yeah.
And that's, you know, yeah, education and community building event. SaltLakeClimbingFestival.com will come online today. So if you feel like, you know, it's for all levels, all abilities to come out, and everybody can always learn something to how to keep yourself, you know, safer and more tools to have when you're out there climbing.
And that's because everybody's a climber. And when are you
exactly.
when are you coming up to Park City and doing your film festival again?
You know, that's usually in the fall is when we do the Real Rock Film Festival for sure. But, and you know, in the meantime, stay tuned for, we do have volunteer events where people can come out and work with us on climbing areas called Adopt a Crags. These are volunteer events. We'll do the next one up at in the Uintas, probably at Ruth Lake or Stone Garden. So if you want to get your hands dirty and give back to the climbing resource, you can always use volunteers to help with the trail work. And go to saltlakeclimbers.org to learn more. And if you can't come tomorrow night, you can still donate online.
Excellent. Julia Geisler.
And join.
And join. And become a climber, because after all, we are all already climbers. I like the thought
of
that.
Glad I got that across.
I know. I'm just going to start calling myself a climber. You too, Tim.
Yeah.
You are.
I've always been a climber.
All right. Julia, nice talking with you as always. Maybe we'll get you back on in August before the big festival. So good luck tomorrow night.
That was great.
All right.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks. Bye. And Julia Geisler, the Salt Lake Climbers Alliance. We'll be right back after these words.
Spend the day outdoors at Utah Olympic Park and save when you buy a gold pass. Valid for day use of the zip lines, alpine slide, extreme tubing, and much more. Add a Comet bobsled ride for the adventure of a lifetime. Activities are open daily from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Details available at UtahOlympicLegacy.org.
Utah Olympic Park is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing winter sport and recreation opportunities, and a KPCW supporter.
Hi, this is Dr. Juliana Miller from Miller Orthodontics, a proud supporter of The Local View with Randy Barton. With a combined 45 years of orthodontic experience, my husband and I are now raising our family and working full-time in the Park City community. There are so many reasons to smile in Park City. More information at m2ortho.com.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life. Want to thank our underwriters.
Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, Park City Mountain, Davidson Orthopedics, Zions Bank, Park Meadows Country Club, and Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation.
Oh, yeah. And thanks for tuning in. You're listening to KPCW Park City. Thanks to our guest, Julia Geisler and Dr. Andrew Weil. And we'll have to save the Gretchen Reynolds story for next week.
When I'll be on hiatus.
When you'll be on hiatus. Have a great hiatus. And
thanks, Lynn.
And I'll miss you. But we'll be seeing you.